Good morning, Brother John. How are you doing, buddy? You're in Pittsburgh, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I'm in Pittsburgh.
Wow. Yeah,
Society for American Baseball Research Conference.
You know, you're famous. You Sabre guys are kind of famous.
A few of us have made the newspaper here and there and other places.
Yeah, yeah. I watched Moneyball the other night. I mean, you know, you guys figured heavily in some of that, you know.
Sabermetrics is a term that's used quite common by the baseball industry to describe the analytic process, you know, watching baseball and evaluating players, etc.
It's pretty cool. I was proud. I said, "Hey, I know that organization. That's kind of cool, right?"
Yeah, it's been around since 1973. I've been involved in it since 1981. So,
wow.
Yeah, I guess I'm a veteran. There's a few of us still around.
Yep, still kicking.
Yeah, about 600 of us here in Pittsburgh, enjoying just vegging out on baseball.
Oh man, well, you know, now Pittsburgh, you know, what's it like there? What's the temperature?
It's in the 60s, mid 60s, a little humid. It was supposed to rain most of the weekend. We were able to get a ball game in yesterday. That's our. We always have one game all of us go to, and it was last night. It went 13 innings, but I got some free baseball, which is always good.
So. Wow! Yeah, free baseball, extra innings. That's right. I learned that from you.
Yeah. So just
pretty
diligently
cool.
Scored it. A little challenge from the finding room to put all the innings on my scorecard, but I was able to succeed. Little plastic surgery on my card, and I was okay.
Whiteout, huh?
Well, had a few lines here and there, you know, just kind of jury rig it so that I could fit those extra innings in there. My card only goes to 11 innings, so I had to kind of force feed a couple extra innings onto it.
Well, it's this looks like it's going to be a pretty good weekend. What are you wearing? Which t-shirt?
I've got the color tee on, so it's number 2.
Okay, so. I got the red. I got my red April 21st concert extravaganza shirt. This one gets a lot of attention.
Yeah, it's pretty good looking. I mean, it's a nice color. I'm envious.
Yeah, that red is a nice color red. It's not cardinal red. It's not bright. No. It's just a step down from that.
Right.
It's got the white thread in it, so it's soft. So
yeah, casual with that one.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely can. And everything stands out nice on this good sheet. Shirt. So, people, if you want a shirt, shirt.bro.show.
Hey.
As always, yeah. We got two good sponsors. You got the good one out there in Pittsburgh. Why don't you tell us real quick what the name of it is?
It's the Premonti Brothers sandwich shops, which are located, I just learned just minutes ago doing a little research. I thought they were just a Pittsburgh thing, but they do find themselves around the primarily the East Coast. There's about, I would say, 40 of them, and most of them reside in Pittsburgh and the state of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Although they do stretch as far south as Florida, and as far west as actually Indiana. So I kind of looked up and saw that. If I got the urge to have another one of these sandwiches, I could.
Go, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I could go as close as Indianapolis and be able to see be able to have one.
That's not far from you at all. So that's pretty
close. No, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But the fact is that they're here in Pittsburgh, they're very well known, and it's kind of funny if you actually if you've been to Pittsburgh and you go back home, somebody'll ask you, "Well, have you had a Premonti sandwich?" And if you haven't, they'll say, "Well, you haven't been to Pittsburgh."
Whoa!
Yeah,
well, you're gonna tell us about that experience, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as we go on with the show, we do our sponsor reads. Yeah, cool.
Okay, I'll give you the details later.
Yeah, deets, and we got a good picture too, boy. And our second sponsor is Bard Home Medical, the home of really good medical supplies. If you're in the catheter and bag business, and we'll go over a little of that stuff later.
Great.
So appetizing. So this weekend you're busy with your stuff out there.
I'm doing pretty good. It's just a lot of research presentations, panels, and of various Pittsburgh baseball personalities, whether it be announcers, players, whatever. So it's a good time, and always meeting a good time to get together with old friends that I've known for quite some time in the baseball world. So I like it a lot.
Yeah. Hey, this week we a new term came up this week in talking to you. I got a big kick out of this. You had me on the floor. It was pretty funny. You, among your other maladies, you seem to be suffering from chronic production. What the hell is chronic production?
Well, I feel that as you get older, it's important that you strive to continue to be productive. And you get to the point where, particularly when you're like myself and semi-retired, I think retired is closer to it. The fact is that you just look for little things to kind of make your day and and you kind of put off your checklist. So to me, I make sure that I try to do one of those things a day. So for example, I might prepare, I still use snail mail to pay bills. So one day I might put the check in the envelope. The next day I'll maybe put the stamp on the envelope, and the day after that I might even put it in the mailbox.
Well, that sounds like putting off bills, chronic cheapness, but that's chronic production.
Well, no, that's what you call timely, just your cash flow, working your cash flow.
working your cash flow.
I do little things like if I get my driver's, the decal for my license plate, I'll go and get the decal, but then on another day, I will actually put the decal on the plate. So I'm able to continuously be working and feel good that every day, hey, you know what? This might be just going out and outside and getting a little fresh air and going down the mailbox and mailing something. I think it's important that you just kind of make sure you keep moving. And this is one way to make sure you do that.
Yeah, and that kind of reminds me of something that I used to work for this guy, Bobby Lee, who's unfortunately has passed on. But his thing was, he used to cite this research thing that IBM did. IBM did some research, and they put, remember those IBM Selectric typewriters?
Yeah, sure do.
Those were with the ball on them and everything?
Yeah.
Those were the standard at one time, and they're pretty good typewriters, pretty heavy too. They had a hell of a motor in them. But anyway, they did research, and they put these things in some high schools. And juniors and seniors they had a control group that just in the morning came in and did study hall. They had another control group that typed. No, nothing fancy. They just typed every morning. And the ones that typed, their grades went up a grade and a half.
Wow.
Average. And the reason was, first thing in the morning, they did something that they could be successful at.
Yeah, momentum. It's good.
Yes. Yeah, just like you're talking about. So I guess that's part of chronic production. You make it sound a little like a disease, though, which is interesting.
Well, that's,
you.
Yeah, I just thought it was it was an interesting way of describing production. So
yeah,
that's fine.
Chronic. Okay. Follow up. We got some follow up.
Sure do.
Yeah, got a great JFK RFK article following up on our RFK show. What I liked about this is it's about a great writer who has passed on.
Right.
And what he did was he was very close to both brothers, but in an interesting kind of way. He had greatly admired JFK. Sounded like he had a little bromance kind of crush thing going on there. And he was an easy guy to do that with. He was charismatic, right?
Mm-hmm.
JFK?
Yes.
And RFK was, kind of like the attack dog,
Right.
And throw a piece of meat and get out of the room kind of a thing. So he described, the change over time in his feelings and attitude about Bobby, and then how, of course, how crushed he was in the end. And the cool thing about it was, the great thing about the article is the last part of the article, well-written article, very nice presentation. Top writer wrote it. about something that's really interesting and that we were just talking about. So I really recommend it. It's super duper. But the last couple paragraphs, they really compare the two brothers and how they dealt with things, and how the one who had the reputation for being so harsh was actually the much kinder, more compassionate, more able to empathize with people, and how he really understood the plight of the poor and the disincluded, you know, the people in the United States at that time. And he was also very aware and very sensitive personally about the separation of peoples and the impending almost civil war in this country between, you know, the young and the old, the different colors, the different economic backgrounds and all that stuff. And he didn't have a political response to it, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
In other words, JFK was always about you see pictures of him kind of looking down the floor and scratching his head and figuring out, how are we going to deal with this, Bobby? You know?
Yeah,
and
right.
And then, you know, but it was always political. Call this guy, call that guy, twist that arm, whatever. But Bobby wasn't like that at all. He would just fucking go there and show up and, you know, actually interact with the people and listen and talk to them. But that was only later years, Bobby. You know, after the blow up with Belafonte and Lena Horne and all those people, where they told him he was a piece of shit. And so, you know, that article covers all this in a fairly short fashion. So if you don't want to watch the 4 hours, you get another view of this thing by reading this article. I thought it was just fantastic. So,
yeah, to mention that, Arthur, that's Art Schlesinger, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Arthur Schlesinger. Art, yeah, really good. I was surprised you didn't call him Artie, you know. Hey, see you at the deli.
Yeah, I was said that only because I figured, I assumed you were close friends, not me. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm so erudite. Yeah, I would hang with the Slesh all the time.
Yeah.
That's what we called him. I don't know, you know. So anyway, FIFA.
Oh, yes. Well, it's as much as the Cinderella story. Kind of had a little bump in the road. Iceland is right now is lost to Nigeria. And so there's 32 teams in this. So we could spend a whole show plus talking about all of them, but we're going to just concentrate on in the team that we're kind of following, which is Iceland,
the world favorite.
And they're in their group includes Croatia, Nigeria, Argentina, and of course Iceland. So the big deal, last week was the fact that Iceland was able to tie Argentina, which is virtually a win for them.
Yeah, it is when their position is where it is. Yeah,
when they're considered such a severe underdog. So since then, what we've had happen is that Argentina has lost, which has put them in a real bad position to Croatia. And Croatia now has won two games. And Iceland and Argentina are confronted with one loss and one tie. And then we got Nigeria that is 1-1. So as a result, Iceland is in a situation where they got one more game. It's a must-win match. And of course, I guess the big story, if Iceland doesn't come out of this winning, is going to be the fact that it's going to take Argentina a must-win also, their final game. So it looks like Croatia is in. They've won two, and so that's kind of the update in that regard. So the Cinderella story is is kind of a little bit reaching midnight here, and we'll just have to see how it plays out over the next week and see what Iceland's able to do. They've got a tough order ahead of them. They've got Croatia to play, which is one. Is 1-2, so we'll just have to see how it works out. So,
The interesting thing about watching a sport that's a world sport is that countries are represented from all over the place, and some of them, 10 years ago were at war and in rubble, and like Croatia, and they're fielding a great team, and you see that. I heard a story in NPR that was kind of along those lines. That cartel down in wherever it is, the Medellin cartel, those guys, the city itself where they were headquartered and everything, of course, has now turned into an art and tourist destination, not as a Godfather kind of thing, but as a real thing. And the arts are really blossoming there. And the program they put together to revive that city and get it out of the clutches of that cartel are very fascinating and interesting. And it's kind of the similar thing when they field a great football team from, I almost said it wrong, a great football team from a city that was in a country that was in ruin, you know, just not too long ago. And it's an interesting way to track news, you know, by looking at how they do in the Olympics, how they do in the FIFA World Cup and all this stuff. So I like the fact that I like this whole thing with FIFA. I think it's great. And if you're not following it, you might just find a team you take a shine to and do a little of it. I love the fact that you can tie if you're in a certain position in this whole thing. And it's the same as a win. I like if you are tanking a little bit, it takes a while. You get lots of second chances, right?
Yes. I mean, it's an interesting sport. What I kind of like about it is that due to they're playing in Russia, so all the games are played, you know, they start as early as 7 o'clock, and they usually finish up there's three games a day, and the third one comes on at one. So you can pretty well get up in the morning and watch soccer. Wow. And you know, it can kind of get your day off with a little sports fix. So yeah. I kind of like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of cool. And you and I have odd sleeping hours, so this is perfect for us, right?
Yeah. It works out great.
Yeah. So super duper. Hey, bad news on the mascot front. I'm taking my hat off and putting it over my heart. This is sad.
Well, the thing is that the Philly Fanatic is probably the best known of all the baseball mascots. I was hoping to get my picture with the Fanatic down in spring training. It didn't quite work out. It was my travel day. And the Fanatic is the kind that likes to basically stay on the field. He's got a little motor scooter that he goes around on. And you don't see him in the fans a lot. And I'm sure that if he's in the stands, he's probably with the high rollers in the suites. So he's a celebrity within the mascot world.
Wow.
So unfortunately, one of the things that they do is they in Chicago, what they do is they throw out T-shirts to the fans. Well, in some of the stands, they throw out hot dogs. And in order to make sure they can hit the fans in the furthest seats, they'll propel them in some sort of gun that they use.
Like the T-shirt shooter.
Yeah, the T-shirt shooter. It's exactly that which I haven't seen that in a while. I have to ask Brett what happened to it.
Yeah, we had that down at the L House one night. Brett almost broke a window
A window across the street. So that in itself, it tells a story.
Yeah,
because it throws things pretty hard. Now the hot dogs, what they do is they don't want them to fall apart while they're out there, you know, being propelled. So they put them in a plastic package. And that what happened, unfortunately, is a fan got hit in the face with a hot dog, unaware that the Fanatic was doing that.
I got to stop you right there. Now, they're actually propelling cooked food items through the air. And now, if you don't catch them and they hit the ground, I've seen the floors of some of these stadiums. Is that a 5-second rule in play here? Are people going to pick those up and eat them? Do they eat these?
Yeah, they do eat them, and keep in mind that they're in plastic. They're wrapped. They're in plastic. You know, that's what keeps them from falling apart, and that's also another good reason that they hit the ground. I think the key to the exercise is for somebody not to step on one of them and smash it,
and slip and fall.
Yeah, fall. Yeah. So
are they cooked? Are they cooked? Are they
hot? They're cooked. They're hot dogs. They're cooked. They're just like you got them from the grill. They're like a prefab.
But
wait.
If they're coated in plastic,
coated. They're wrapped up in a plastic. You know, it's like
and they're hot.
Yeah.
Well, that would like expand from the heat, wouldn't it? And I see problems. I see a lot of thermodynamic problems.
Well, I would like to say that I've caught one of these hot dogs, but it's not exactly. I could have been a victim like the poor lady because I'm usually working on my scorecard when they throw this stuff around. And usually you can rely upon somebody else around you to be nutty enough to stand up and start fighting in order to get in a good position to catch one of these. But this lady, unfortunately, she was not in such a section. She's sitting there all alone, and she didn't know the hot dog's getting propelled towards her. It hits her in the face, and she ends up suffering a pretty big bruise. They did take her down in the first aid, did x-rays to make sure she didn't break any bones on her face. But she's going to have a large bruise. And, you know, I'm sure that the Philadelphia Phillies are interested in making sure that they don't get sued. Free tickets, exactly. But when I was going to take a picture of this, and I should have, and what I'll do is I'll take it to today, okay, perhaps, and that is that they have these signs, even here in Pittsburgh, in the ballpark, warning you, and they don't say warn you against baseballs. They say make it more general than that, warn you about flying items coming from the field is the terminology.
Wow.
So that covers not only baseballs, it covers bats, which is a second most common thing that's going to come off the field.
Yeah.
And of course it also covers hot dogs. So your ticket also usually has the back of it written by lawyers.
Wow.
That will excuse them from liability, saying buyer beware. You're going to be entering a stadium where there are flying projectiles, the most common being a baseball. But there are others, too.
Wow. So, wow. Wow. Well, our last item of follow-up is Dennis Rodman.
Oh, yeah.
Good news. Good news.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, we kind of came up with what some people might think is a crazy idea, that if you look at the Nobel Peace Prize, we've had a candidate such as we don't mention his name, our president, as a candidate for the Nobel Peace Prize. But when we take a look at this whole North Korea thing, I think the one who stands tall is Dennis Rodman.
Literally.
You mentioned that already. So there was a sports writer here in Chicago, that Rick Morrissey, who said things might be stranger than you think. But I think, you know, Dennis Rodman is the one who basically should get some credit for maybe not being the one who organized the meeting with our president and Kim, North Korea, but clearly Dennis broke the ice.
Years ago,
he found out that the North Korean leader has interest in basketball, and Dennis took it upon himself, and without the blessing of the previous president, he kind of did it on his own.
Without the blessing, he took a lot of heat.
He took, yeah, I'm being kind. The fact is that they said this is a circus act, and we know Dennis is a publicity hound.
Sure.
But let's take a look at it a little bit closer. Dennis has followed up on this. This isn't a one and done. He's been over there a couple times, including the fact that he went over there
to Singapore.
To Singapore, so that if there was a need, and believe me, we know that there's a certain person who met with Kim who needs all the help he can get.
Yeah.
And so Dennis was in the wings saying, look, I'm not going to disrupt anything, but just to let you know, I'm here hanging. And if you guys want to hang with me or do whatever, I'm here and willing to help. So
yep.
That was great.
Yep. And when it went well, he was crying tears of joy. He was so happy.
Yes. Yeah.
Good man. So, we like Dennis, don't we?
Yes, we sure do. He's a great guy. He still continues to find ways of being an ambassador for not only basketball, but he's, I think, done more than that. And he's so glad to see he gets a little credit.
Yeah, he's done a lot for cross-dressing, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He wears the largest dresses in the world.
Yeah, when you're 6'8", yeah, I would say that he has custom-made dresses, or maybe he goes to the woman's large shop. I have no idea where he gets his stuff.
We don't know. Potential sponsor. Who knows, right?
Yeah, there could be a sponsor there. That's for sure.
Yeah. So. Well, we got our big topic today is things have over the last, when did we start our journey with our cancer and all this stuff? This is, by the way, if you're listening, don't tune out. This is going to be good, interesting conversation, I think. And it certainly isn't going to be full of jokes and stuff like that, but probably that's the main way we get through it, isn't it?
I think it's important that we do add a little lightness to it, although we've had our challenges.
Yeah. And when did you start?
Well, my thing starts back in would be 2016.
16, yeah.
Yeah, where I ended up being diagnosed in the it would have been in March of 2016.
Right.
And with both, I had both symptoms and of rectal cancer in March, and I was actually, my PSA had gone up through a annual exam, and I'd been diagnosed with prostate cancer.
Yeah.
And we've had a couple of shows where we talked about it, talking about actually
the early days mostly.
Yeah. Talking about the importance of, like, you know, early detection. The fact is that we have another show talking about treatment. And the fact is that the treatments for cancer is, you know, there's no probably cure for cancer. But clearly the treatment for cancers have allowed people to become cancer survivors. And
yep.
And we talked about the fact that in the old days, chemotherapy and radiation had some pretty severe side effects. And
yep.
So I think what we can talk about now is the fact that, number one, how are we doing? And number two, a little bit about how the side effects have played into our lives. So
yeah, and let's get the time straight here, too. So you're talking March 16, and
yeah.
I'm talking November 16.
Right. So by November 16, we have myself having both prostate cancer and rectal cancer, and you having, prostate cancer. And
right. And so, my son just died.
Died.
Like, so a week before.
So we have losses of common things and things that are just a little bit different, too.
Yeah. So what I want to kind of focus on a little bit is missing parts, you know,
yes.
that, and, you know, and how our system, whether it's a physical system, a psychological system, or even an emotional system, we have these systems within us. And so they have to compensate for things that are missing. And so, you know, we each got some pretty major portions of our bodies taken out. And
yes.
because we had to, in order to survive the cancer, to either stop the cancer from spreading or, in my case, bedevil the cancer into being
right.
so confused it doesn't know what the fuck to do, and it gives up for a while anyway.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's an interesting thing that you don't think about or talk about in the early days because your focus gets very short-term, right?
You
start thinking in terms of I don't want to start having these symptoms tomorrow or next week or next month or this year. And you think your focus gets relatively short, and also your decision-making really changes. And so I'm sure if, you know, you're on the street, you don't have cancer or anything like that, someone says, well, you know, we don't think you need that rectum, or we don't think you need your testicles. You know, we're going to take them out. You know, it gets to be a real problem and a tough decision. But when you're sitting there with all these numbers in front of you and a high PSA however they measure rectal cancer.
Well, what they do is you get CAT scans every 3 months or 6 months, and you're holding your breath as you go to the doctor, and, you know, what is there in the words are evidence of cancer in my case is the words you want to hear. But before we get along too far, you know, we mentioned that we try to take this, as much as it's serious, we also like to keep it at, we got to put a little levity into it. So
I thought I'd interject.
One of our good listeners has a 10 cents, what we call groaner jokes. And he sent me one yesterday that I thought could fit into this. So I'm going to just throw it out right
Let's
now.
Let's do it. This is Vince. We're talking about Vince Lauder.
Vince Lauder.
Let's make it official. Vincent Anthony Lauder.
Wow, that's impressive.
Thank you.
So he sent me one out, and basically the joke was, what is the scariest part of getting sick at the airport?
What I don't know, John.
Scariest part?
What is the scariest part of getting sick at the airport?
Well, you might just get a terminal illness.
Oh, God. Oh.
And as bad as
oh.
and when he first told me that, I said, well, I don't know if we should use it for the show, because we both have cancer.
Terminal illness.
But then I thought, you know what? It fits. Let's go. Let's run with it.
I like it. from that standpoint, but it is a groaner, definitely, and I did groan.
Yeah.
We've got another for later in the show. We've got another groaner, as I recall, a pretty good one.
Yeah, I got a couple more, but I'll just kind of leave our audience, teasing them a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's a tease, definitely. You want to hang on, not miss anything, yeah. And get that groaner. So anyway, what's the
recent word? Jerry?
Yeah, my world got rocked a little bit this last week, and like you said, John, there's this cycle you go through, this 90-day cycle. And yeah. Every 90 days, you get something checked if you have cancer, maybe every month. Right. And so the thing they check with me is my PSA. It's a specific antigen that prostate cancer people have, PSA. What is it? It's a prostate-specific antigen, I think. Yeah. And it's something that shows up in your blood if your prostate is on the move, if your cancer is on the move, if it's growing, if it's spreading. So that's what they always watch. Mine has been just a little above zero since I got my orchiectomy, since I got castrated. And if you hadn't heard previous shows, the reason they do this to people with stage 4 prostate cancer or metastatic prostate cancer is it's spreading. And you can't cut it out. That makes the problem worse. And you can't do chemo because there is no chemo for a slow-moving cancer like prostate cancer. And also, you can't treat it with radiation because it's in too many places,
right.
And it's a fool's errand. So there's only one thing you can do is you can deprive the cancer of androgen. Androgen is produced by testosterone. Testosterone is produced by the testes. Mm-hmm. So you do one of two things: you either remove the testes, or you put in a blocker that keeps your brain from getting the message to them to produce testosterone. And there's, most people get the shot in pills for the blockers to block the production. And many people falsely believe that, after some years you can stop doing that and suddenly your testicles come back to life. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. They do atrophy and they're gone. So it's the same as getting surgery. So I opted for the surgery because I didn't want to take the shots, and I did the research and found out that the side effects from the shot are really there, and things like bone density degrade much faster from the shot and the pills. So I made what I thought was a pretty easy decision, but I came to find out that very few people have that done in the United States because of our self-image as men and all that sort of stuff, which I totally right. understand.
Yes.
But that said, that's how you end up with a cancer that is not testicular cancer, and you have to get castrated if you want to live. And if you don't do that, then, within a year, you could be dead. And that year is not a nice year. It's very painful. The first place that prostate cancer goes is your bones. And as anyone with bone cancer or seen anyone or known anyone with bone cancer, it's really the worst. It's so painful.
Pretty painful, and it's so
slow. And so it's a very slow, painful way to die. So that's a pretty good incentive to do whatever it takes to get the job done. So
right.
every 90 days, my PSA and also a number of other things like the BUNN, which is measures something in your blood to tell if your kidneys are about to crap out. So I have stuff around my kidneys too in the way of cancer. Mm-hmm. So those are the two things they always look at. They always ask me about bone pain. They always look at my kidney function, and they ask me how I'm urinating, if I'm dizzy, if I'm breathless and all that. Every 90 days I get these questions. And so I reached a point about 180 days ago where I could tell there's a little something different in the questions and a little different in the response to my numbers. My numbers were so rock bottom low. They did the imaging and everything in my body had shrunk by 50%. Everybody's really pretty happy, bat packs, kisses all around. Everybody's thrilled with my progress, and they're surprised that I'm not starting to see my PSA go up and start showing symptoms. So that all changed this week because my PSA is starting to climb again. And it's not terrible, but on the other hand, it is concerning. And so I'm on a 28-day watch instead of a 90-day or 30-day, rounded up or down. And so now, since the PSA is going up, it could be one of two things. Testicles are not the only place where testosterone is produced. Your adrenal glands also produce a certain very small amount of testosterone. In my case, it was undetectable. So they didn't think that that was a big deal. But it may be that my adrenals have suddenly tried to compensate for my backup singers missing and producing extra testosterone. And that may account for my PSA, but we won't know until the 17th of next month. So if that's the case, then I only have to take a relatively cheap, common pill called Casodex, and it will stop the adrenals from doing their badness. I can't take it now or earlier because it doesn't work unless you produce a certain amount of testosterone through your adrenals. So no Casodex for you, Jerry. You have to wait. So now
it's a waiting game. That's the tough part.
This is terrible because you don't know. In every 90 days I go through, you know, a period of all kinds of turmoil mentally and emotionally, and the people around me don't appreciate it, but I can't help it. I'm worried about it, and I go through all kinds of things not to be worried about it, but you still worry about it because I still have people who depend upon me. If I'm gone, you know, my daughter, my wife, and my circle of friends down here will be in distress, and I don't like that. So, yeah. So anyways, let's say you may ask, listener and brother, well, Jerry, if it's not your adrenal glands producing extra testosterone, what in the fuck is it? Well, it's the worst thing possible. My cancer, I'm not saying this happened, but this could be what happened. My cancer has learned how to thrive without androgen, without testosterone, because testosterone produces androgen. So somehow it has become what they call castration resistant. And this is what you do not want to have happen if you have stage 4 prostate cancer. You don't want to hear those words. They are the words of a year of pain and then death. So what is there any hope for people who have a slow-moving cancer that can't be treated with chemo, can't be treated with radiation, can't be cut out? What are you going to do?
Yes, it's I know there's you know, always things happening, developments that provide you with some options. And I just kind of bring this into perspective with your situation. And we've already cited these numbers when we had Dr. Yang on. But the fact is that stage 4 prostate cancer has probably about maybe 25-30% chance of
surviving
survival.
5 years.
5 years. So
I'm about at that point. I'm 4 or 5 right now. I'm a little under 4 or a little over 4.
Right. So I just want to kind of give everybody the perspective.
Context.
Yeah. It's not something we want to belabor and talk a lot about because we want to be positive. We want to consider and everybody has an individual situation. That's what we constantly talk about on our show.
Yes.
So don't hang your hat on the numbers, but you got to be realistic and know the number too. So
well,
just want to point that out.
I think that blocking and denying and stuff like that, it depends on who you are and how you do things. But that's not my MO. If I've got something, I don't try to hide it because what I find is hiding and pretending is very stressful for me and personally. And it's just not in my makeup. Some people are better at it than other people. And sometimes people are good at it and it destroys them. You know, I know people have had what I have and they're dead now. And talking to their spouse and loved ones, you find out that they were just in complete denial about it. And they just went into a death spiral psychologically and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And your doctors are constantly aware of this. This is the handling of a cancer patient. You learn how to not go too far with the rainbows and unicorns. But on the other hand, you have to also be realistic so that people know what they're dealing with and they don't get too casual about this. So that's the balancing act that oncologists do every day. And I don't envy them. That's a tough job.
I mean, the tough job when in this situation is, and it's an element where quite often people say, well, the doctors aren't very good on prognosis. They don't, but the bottom line is they are conscious of the fact that this is an area, very sensitive area, that you got to treat each patient individually. And the fact is that less information is probably better, but some information is important.
It's a game.
Yeah.
It's a little game they play with you. I had no idea, really. And I could have found out, all my metrics of the disease. But at the time, my son had just gotten killed. And, and then, the treatment, my treatment is to get castrated. And that's not a casual thing. It's a small operation. It takes 20 minutes. It's a fancy vasectomy. It's not, your scrotum getting snipped off and cauterizing. And, it's not Game of Thrones castration. It's very sophisticated, very fast. It's painful as hell for a week. But after that, you can cross your legs pretty well. So it's it is what it is. But all that's going on, and how much of this do you really want to know? That's the question. And you have a limit. But over time, the need to block and deny gets less, and the need to know gets more. And the doctors are constantly monitoring this. And I have to give a lot of credit to these guys. They know how to do this because they've done it a lot. And I've got three doctors. One of them just tells me the truth, and it's pretty fucking raw. You got 3 years. Enjoy. That was one doctor.
Oh,
And then
dear.
there's Yang and Castillo, who are much cagier about it and very skillful. And so, I went through this week. And so Dr.
Wow.
Yang is about at the end of his ability to treat me. If it is castration resistance, he can't do any more for me. If it is my adrenals, then he's right there with the Casodex, and he's also become a friend. So that it'd be hard parting. I love Nurse Jackie and Chris Yang. They are great guys and gals. But Dr. Castillo, on the other hand, is really the artful dodger. He is got skills way off the charts when it comes to this stuff. And every time I see him, he at the end of the whole thing, he does a real combination of words and touch. He knows just how to put his hand on my shoulder or my back at the end of the whole thing, and I always feel better, always. And I have a high need to be touched because of other things. Affection is kind of one of my compensatory things, and he knows this somehow about me. And so I always feel better when I leave. And I start feeling so good, I stop asking questions, which I think is the point, right?
That is
And
it.
there's
He's done
another
his
thing.
job.
There's another thing that has to be said. These guys, particularly oncologists, their enemy is, I hate to say it, the internet. The internet. And the internet, within the internet, the enemy is the forums. These forums are grousing grounds, right? So, that's what they're dealing with. So he had his hands full this week because there was, me and my situation, and I may be, he called it a flutter. He has nice terms too, great
Flutter, I like
words.
that. It's a little bit, the little blip
Yeah.
here that we'll just have
Oh,
to see
just
where
a
it's going.
flutter. Just a flutter. So he had talked to me about fluttering about a year ago. And that's what we're looking for, he said. If it goes up and down, you're fluttering. And that's a prelude to castration resistance. So it's going to give us some time. And he says, time is your friend. The more time you can buy, the better. And he's right. So even if a treatment is short term, and let's face it, the orchiectomy for 70% of the, or 75% of all stage four prostate guys, the orchiectomy or the shots are nothing but buying time, usually 3 to 4 years. So what's the point, right? Well, there's a big point here. That is discovery. So sure enough, last year, and about 6 months ago, a lot of publication of two landmark studies showing there is a combination of drugs that can actually 90% and higher percent of the time stop this shit, stop the castration-resistant cancer in its tracks. Over 90% cure rate, meaning that now, since if I am castration resistant, that's bad, but it's also good. I go from a 25% survival rate to 90%. That's a fucking turnaround, my bro. That's big. That's
That's
big.
big stuff.
Now, the bad part, these drugs cost $11,600, not a year, a month. They're a specialty drug. They're not covered by anything. It's almost impossible to get insurance to play ball.
Yeah.
What do you do? Well, you, this is the part where you could crumble into a little ball and, you know, the crying doesn't stop and, you know, your loved ones start really getting concerned. Well, you know, here I am in Castillo's office and I knew what the verdict was. I did manage to get the amount down to $11,000, $1,100 a month from $11,000, with various tricks that Dr. Yang helped me get. You know, he got me a discount card for drugs. It worked on this, got me a $10,500 discount. So I was in range. I don't have that kind of money on a monthly basis, but you know, I could raise it through, you know, the various online tools they have and, you know, who knows how. But I there was some hope that I could do it, but I was not looking forward to that. And he said to me, famous words of my wonderful oncologist, Dr. Castillo, that's too high. You shouldn't have to pay that. He said, I want to introduce you to some people here. And he introduced me to three wonderful ladies, one guy and two ladies, who each one of them handed me off to the next person because they felt like my particular situation could be best handled by the next person. And I was starting to get discouraged. I'll be honest, John.
Yeah.
When you get handed off, you get a little discouraged.
Oh, that's frustrating.
Now I finally get to Vanessa Pettigene, and I'm in her office. She's this cute little gal, had to be in her 20s, and she had her master's, and she really knew her shit, and she has this cute little voice, and she's a cute little gal. And she just enchanted me. I loved her and put me at ease and said, there's these organizations that can help you. And basically, she kind of put the ball in my court to try and apply to these different places to get help. Mm-hmm. And I'm this goes against the grain a little bit. And I don't like asking for charity. And I don't, I'm not a food stamp kind of person. So even though I probably qualify for them. But, okay, what am I going to do? So I went home. A little discouraged, and I thought, well, I'll hand this off to Mary Jane. Well, here's what happened, John.
What happened?
I didn't do anything. Mary Jane didn't do anything. We just hugged each other and comforted each other for the next 24 hours. I ate some of these really good paleo tarts. They're on my diet. They allow me to eat something really sweet and wonderful without getting insulin shock. And so, you know, and I did various things like that, visited my friend WT, you know, did all the things I do to kind of get through the day. And then here it is. We get a phone call 48 hours after my oncology visit. And this is out of the blue. And then there's this woman on the other end of the line. I only picked it up because it said Texas Oncology on the ID. Mm-hmm. And this is a woman I've never met. And she said, Vanessa spoke with me yesterday, and I think we can help you. I said,
wow.
Really? I said, well, what do you mean? And so we're on the phone for 10 minutes. And she says, if you have time and you have some answers to my questions, I will know, like, before the end of this phone call, whether or not we can get you some help on financing the Zytiga, which is the name of the drug, mm-hmm. and the prednisone, which is a common drug, funding for those. I said, okay. And so I had to get my 1040s and all that kind of stuff and answer some questions. And Mary Jane and I, you know, answered her questions on the phone. And then she said, hold on a minute. And she went to her computer and did a bunch of stuff. She said, in 10 days, you will have Zytiga and prednisone delivered to your house. They're going to have to call you ahead of time. So be prepared for an 800 number call. They block the ID, so you won't know who it is. Just pick up every 800 number call within a week, after a week. And they'll verify who you are. And then the next day, FedEx, you'll have your drugs. And I said, yeah, right. I said, how much do I have to pay? She said, you only have to pay $4 a month for the prednisone. The Zytiga is free for a year. And then you reapply.
Wow. I'm so glad. This is news to me today. So
I held off, John.
Yeah, you did. And I really appreciate you, you know, giving this getting a really positive thing to end up your situation, which you know, I obviously is ongoing, and we'll just have to continue, you know, hearing about it. And I think one thing we've learned, and that is that it's important to have somebody to talk to. Now you've got Mary Jane, you've got me. I don't have, you know, my wife's passed away, so it's always good for me to be able to call you and talk to you about some of the challenges I have along the way, and we all do. It's just
that's the way it is. Yeah, that's the way it works. And so, you know, this is I don't think there's any words to describe how much pressure went off of me when she said they're going to cover 100% of the drug, but you will have to buy the prednisone. But if you buy it with our help, it'll only cost you $4 a month.
Sweet.
And wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, now if you look at the side effects from prednisone, they're not insignificant, but it turns out that you really have to understand how drugs interact. With the Zytiga, you get almost the chance of getting any side effects is very low, which is unusual for any cancer treatment, and it's even unusual for prednisone. But the synergy between these two drugs is pretty unusual, and it was discovered by accident, of course, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when they started developing this drug combo and then started testing it. And they have longitudinal high number tests, two of them, and the numbers are almost identical in both tests, and it is over 90% cure rate, under 10% side effects.
Wow.
That's so almost hard to believe.
Yeah, that's truly amazing.
So,
and such good news.
You got to hang in there, though. Yep. You got to get through the night and talk about fluttering. I mean, see, with my hormonal situation, I am going through what women go through when they have menopause. It's called andropause. And a sudden drop in hormones causes your system to go into kind of a shock hormonally. And you have several symptoms, but one of them is mood swings.
Yeah.
And so I already have nearly deathly mood swings, people can tell you. And so going through this with these triggers of you're on, you're off, you're on, you're off, you're living, you're dying, you know, that just terrible stuff. So getting this pressure off, now I just get to go through my usual menopausal boost things, which seem pretty good right now.
Yeah, everything's right? Relative, that's for sure.
Oh, I had 5 hot flashes yesterday. Who the fuck cares? You're gonna live. You might live. You know, you might not be dead next year. So this is good stuff. This is good news. And you know, I don't talk about this much out loud, but you know, at night when it's dark, I have a hard time.
Wow. Well, I'm glad to hear that. At least we are able to talk about your situation.
Yeah, now you
love swing in the end.
You've lost, you know, losing testicles is a small part of your body, but it's a big part of your makeup as a human being. And I'm not a macho guy, so I don't really suffer much from, you know, having a certain kind of self-image. I don't care about that so much. I've always been kind of a little bit androgynous, so it's not a big deal for me. But you have no idea what it's like once you're producing zero testosterone. It's very, very dark. It's very desolate. Mm. There's a whole section of your life that is absolutely gone, and it's overnight. So it's your emotions, it's memories, it's all kinds of stuff just evaporates. So that's not as slight as it sounds. And so that's a body part that's missing that I compensate for.
Yeah.
You know, my compensatory thing is affection. You know, I can't experience the feelings, you know, it's nice to daydream as if you're male about, you know, your past sexual triumphs and possible future ones and fantasies. And you know, there's certain graphics that happen to appear somehow on the internet, and they're very stimulating. And you have memories of, you know, things happen. And it's not like, you know, you get raging boners and you ejaculate all over the walls. No. These are pleasant little experiences that you can use not to have to think about something else. They're an escape, right?
Yeah. Right.
Within 24 hours, those were all gone, and I didn't realize how much I depended on them until they're gone. So what do you do? What do you do to substitute? So for me, my substitute thing, and everybody's got everything, is affection. Is I found myself able and wanting to display and receive affection more. And so, and I didn't even care who it was, a man or a woman or a dog. But kids, unbelievable thing, you know, if they're near my son's age, particularly. So that's my compensation, you know, wearing nail polish, believe it or not. Somehow that made me feel better. And why did it make me feel? I really don't know. I'm guessing it's not trying to hide from being a eunuch, you know, not denying that you're a eunuch. And, you know, I have to admit, it bothers me when people call me sir, and because I don't feel like a man. I don't want to try to be a man. I don't want to be a woman, but I do not want to pretend like I'm this guy who can, you know, shoot the shit with the guys over the water cooler about, you know, how hot some babe is or something. Now, I appreciate the beauty of women like our friend Mika that we watch every morning, but I don't think about boning her, you know, it just doesn't happen. But I do think about her crying on the air the other day about the kids being torn from their mothers. And I just wanted to hug her and kiss her and give her some of this affection that I've got in abundant amounts. So I have compensation for no testicles, no, you know, I guess lust. Is that what it is? Something.
Yeah. But
that's what I do. Now, you lost a major body part. You lost your rectum, which doesn't, and you're losing your prostate's got problems too.
Right? Yeah, it's.
You lost something. What do you do to compensate? What's that like?
Well, the thing is that I think that what my situation is a little bit, it's different, obviously.
But the same in principle.
But the same in principle. So I've got the phone calls. I'll talk a little bit about the rectum lack thereof in a second. But I have a parallel situation that takes place with yours, and that is I get CAT scans.
Yeah.
Usually 90 days. And so as a result, I had a CAT scan. I was scheduled then to go over the results with my oncologist. And then all of a sudden, I get a phone call the day before I'm supposed to go in. And it's the assistant to the oncologist calling me up and asking me, how are you feeling? Are you out of breath? This and that. And she kept asking. I said, well, what's the deal here? And she says, well, the good news is that we show no evidence of cancer with your on your latest CAT scan. The bad news is you've got a pulmonary embolism, which is life-threatening. If that happens to get detached in your lung, you could die pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I said, well, we're meeting tomorrow morning, so perhaps we can figure out our game plan on how to do this, because right now I'm on my way, as usual, to a baseball game. And she says, well, I think it'd be best for you to come in now rather than tomorrow.
Yeah, like this hour.
So, yeah, like get on your bicycle and get your butt over here pronto.
Right.
So I ended up going over there and found out that I need to take blood thinners. And I'd taken blood thinners before for clots, blood clots that were located in my legs. But now we got one in a very critical area, and they have to be a little bit more aggressive. So I'm taking blood thinners that I administer through self-injection twice a day.
Right.
And it's done for 6 months, of which now I'm in the middle of my second, towards the end of my second month. So, it's in my situation, what I'm finding is that the side effects of my treatment, of which we've said are less, they're still there. There are some side effects. And this is a good example of the cancer, and not that the cancer doesn't necessarily cause this embolism to take place, but you are more likely to have it if you've had chemotherapy.
Yep.
And so here I am. I've already had several things I've had to have done with respect to my that. And one of them is that, so somebody asked me the other day, well, how are you doing with your neuropathy? That's another symptom. And I kind of said, that's like number four on my list of things I'm concerned about right now. I've got, you know, basically what's happening is I've got a rectum. I don't have a rectum. So my digestive tract is being challenged because basically my colon is right up against my anus. And so it takes a while for your body to get accustomed to a new digestive tract. So there's no, you know, it isn't like all of a sudden I'm going to, you know, shit in my drawers, but I'm going to have a different protocol.
Yeah. You're not going to walk around farting because you never know what's coming out.
Yeah, you got to be careful with respect to that. And so it's a learning experience. It's my body has to learn, and I have to learn.
And you have to train it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a, and so I'm going through the process of doing that. And so and the other thing is that I just had hernia surgery a couple of months ago.
Right. Because so, side effect also.
Side effect because number one of the surgery caused some, the muscles in my stomach to be kind of torn up and put back together. The chemotherapy and chemotherapy also causes
weakness.
That weakness. So I'm dealing with a large mesh that's covering my stomach and how
your lower abdomen that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know all the buzzwords.
Yeah.
But,
sorry.
But that's okay. And so that's another thing that I've got to deal with. So I've got a lot of factors that are playing into it. But again, I had the phone call, but you know, and you had the appointment.
Mm.
And so that's, you know, we just kind of life moves on. And I feel, you know, thankful that there's no evidence of cancer. And I'm also in a situation where with my rectal cancer, they say, look, the first two years in terms of having the cancer come back are the most likely.
Yep.
And I've kind of, you know, I'm, you know, passing that mark.
Yep.
And that's that. And so that's,
yeah,
that's so what I have right now.
Yeah, it's passing my mark too. At the same time you were, because I entered that same period. Mary Jane said, "Well, you're on the cusp. We'll know in the next months, you know, whether it's coming back or not." And you're in the same boat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like everything's relative in terms of how you feel and what's, you know, problems. And I'll mention this again. When people say to you, "Well, how do you feel?" It's hard, you know, it's like, it's a hard question to answer because you don't know how you're supposed to feel.
Right.
I'm 2 years older. So as a result, how much of this
is
how
age.
I feel is age.
Yeah.
How much of it is the fact that I had cancer? How much of it is the surgery? How much of it is chemotherapy? How much of it is radiation?
How much of it is being more sedentary?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not out there running 4 miles a day, you know, 5 days a week. I'm active, but I'm nowhere near as active as I used to be.
Yeah, you were one of the most active people I knew. You were like a blur when we were growing up.
Yeah.
You know, you were always moving, always doing something, you know, running somewhere, doing something, you know, and I was the antithesis of that. I looked like a lump compared to you. So
yeah,
I did get more active as I got older, but, you know, that's part of who you are. Now, here's the real question. You know, I've kind of disclosed how I dealt with something I lost. And I didn't do it on purpose. It just kind of happened to me. Do you find yourself, what are the compensations that you give yourself or that kind of you automatically have fallen into to compensate for the parts of you that are missing? And
yeah, well, it all kind of starts with me, with the loss of my wife, which was about 10 years ago. So I've had to, and I'm not, and I don't have children.
Right.
So what we've bonded ourselves tremendously over the last couple of years.
You and I.
So, yeah, so that's part of it. I also feel that my passion is, and since I'm I think there's two things I've done. Number one is everybody says, well, you're retired, right? And I'm not retired.
Yeah.
I have an incredibly wonderful client called Center for Humans and Nature, which we've talked about before. They're the ultimate employer, and their staff that I go. And I might just work, you know, maybe 10, maybe 8 to 10 hours a week, but I go there and hang. You know, so I'll go there and I'll, you know, rather than sitting at home and being on the computer, I'd like to be around people. So that's one thing that I do is I stay active and I interact with not only with my family, which is you. And what I do is I also interact with people that I feel comfortable and enjoy being with. The other thing I do is I've kind of punched up, if it's possible, my baseball.
No, your baseball has changed. I've watched it change over the last 2 years. It's a religion now.
Yeah, there is a
spiritual aspect.
There is a spiritual aspect to how I approach it, where I don't live and die in terms of results of games. I don't get too upset about it. I kind of take it and dissect it and think about it in terms of how it relates to how I feel about the world and how the stories that baseball provides me with are almost like stories out of the Bible.
Yeah.
And so,
which you don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. I like that. I like that, John. I think that's cool. I like it.
You know, and I've during even this conference, I've run into a couple of the presentations, guys that that have used their baseball experience, and they're very religious.
Yeah.
And how it's helped them, you know, work through, because we're at this point, the demographics of my organization and baseball in general are not what you call, you know, a pleasant to the marketer. We're older guys who, you know, and it's sad to, you look around and see some of your fellow Sabre members that are struggling in terms of their physical capabilities, et cetera. And then, you know, some of them you just don't see anymore because they're passed away.
Or they're incapacitated totally and can't move.
He's not traveling as much as he used to.
Right, right.
Well, you don't want to hear any more than that. That's pretty bad stuff.
Yeah, it is. It really is. But the bottom line is nature abhors a vacuum, and we are part of nature. And
yes.
Can't be avoided. It happens. Well, we're at 65 minutes, brother, and I know you've got a donor's meeting to go to there.
Yeah, I've got it. I can just tell you, why don't I just finish off with a groaner, and I'll finish up with this one. Where do cats go when they die? Where do cats go when they die?
I don't know, John. Where do cats go when they die?
Purgatory.
Oh, a Catholic joke. Very nice.
Yeah. Then what do you expect from Vince? What the hell?
That's right.
Oh,
that's
excuse me. What the purgatory?
Yeah. Good one, John. Good one.
Okay.
Good one. Well, good show. Thank you, John.
Okay. Talk to you later. Okay. Bye-bye.